Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the radio. And no, it's not a radio. It's a computer.
It's not even a computer.
It's a phone. It's Wi-Fi in your car. Elvis asked the other day, is there Wi-Fi in this car? He's five.
My car has Wi-Fi.
It does. My car has Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Bob, you're laughing.
That's crazy. Get with it, man.
Yeah.
What's that? Father's Day gift. Yeah, hook your car up with Wi-Fi.
I got to get Wi-Fi.
Listen, our special guest are, first of all, Shelley Sprague.
Hi, everyone.
Always here.
Everyone knows Shelley.
In spirit, always.
But our extra special guest, Craig Shoemaker.
This is so great for me because my kids told me on the way over, didn't you love that show, Celebrity Rehab? I said, yes, I was addicted to it.
Wow.
And now I'm sitting with the entire show.
The treatment team is right here.
So strange.
Isn't that weird?
What did you like about it? Because often we wonder what people liked about it.
It was literally addictive.
It had me.
And I am an addict, so that's just perfect.
And did you care?
It's almost like seeing where I could have gone.
Did you care about certain people more? You're rooting for like the worst of the worst, or you wanted Jason Davis kicked out, or what was it?
There's a little combination of freak show.
Well, because
I was wondering why, if Bai Ling was on the roof, why the cameraman didn't save her. I had some logical things going on like that.
Because she was running up the ladder, and I was back thinking, well, I didn't want her to get hurt. It was Shelley to get hurt. I really remember how that happened. I remember her, Shelley going, oh my God, Bai's on the roof.
There were some things where I was going, oh, that's scripted.
Oh no.
It wasn't really scripted.
You know how drug addicts are. You give them a camera, they'll do anything.
but what was problematic, Susan and I are watching a show now called Unreal. You seen that show?
No.
It's about the behind the scenes. It's a scripted show about what The Bachelor is like behind the scenes.
Right.
And it's very familiar, you two, the producers and the writers and the EPs and stuff.
No, they should have been taping the behind the scenes of the behind the scenes.
Of our thing. Because we were busily trying to get in the way of them doing reality production.
Oh, okay.
Because it was too dangerous. It's like, you can't do that to sick. These are sick people. Don't worry. This shit will happen. It's fine.
Right.
It's a treatment set. Stuff they didn't trust that stuff would always go down, and they wanted to monkey with the pay. I'm like, get out of here. Do not go near them.
And then add the narcissistic quality of celebrities.
Yeah.
On top of they're not a celebrities anymore. So that's a lot of layers.
That's why I was watching.
I was pretty confident that if they're real addicts, everything's going to be fine. But initially going in, people were nervous. Like, are they going to talk? Are they going to open up? And I was like, they might be a little guarded in the beginning, but then they won't be able to help themselves.
Right.
They're addicts. Because
they'll lose the idea, and then they'll start talking about themselves, and they won't be able to stop.
Yeah. You know what the irony is? I transferred my addictions to addictive television.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
Like Making a Murderer. It was so bad for me. The addiction was so bad, I sent my kids who wanted to play with me. And I'm working a lot these days. I'm like, my wife calls it screen time. I go, take the screens. Go. Okay. Leave me alone. 10 hours straight.
Do you know, on the Murder Channel?
No, it's called Making a Murderer.
Making a Murderer was a documentary.
It's a Netflix channel. Ten parts.
Don't tell me about more things I need to watch. I got too much.
But
hold on.
Now I'm into the OJ
thing.
That
was crazy.
If you go to the Dr. Drew podcast at the website, I interview the prosecutor. The guy that is vilified in the thing.
He should be.
It's presented so skewed.
Really?
Oh my God.
He became a
sex addict porn, a sex addict opiate addict.
Yeah.
And the DA?
And I just had a terrible, and the guy's way into recovery now and he's grateful and he's like, look, I'm just telling the story the
is
way
he grateful
happened.
Enough to get these people, you know, like especially that he, kid?
He thinks the teenager that got put away was a travesty. He said they had a deal in place, but that mom, this was him, saying the mom forced it to go to trial. He begged them not to go to trial, begged them, because he knew it wouldn't go well. And he, the prosecutor, although he was doing his job, was mortified at that interview that everyone was so freaked out about.
Right.
Where they just basically...
That was hideous.
It was hideous, yeah. Everything you hated about what happened to that kid, and even the guy who actually did the murder, he hated too. which is interesting. But he had to do had a job to do. You know, he's doing his job, and there were so many layers to how they got to that place right. that weren't in the documentary, in terms of people not being able to make deals, people not being willing to be honest, people, you know,
it's just American justice.
Well, that's the thing, is I am really, really, like, I'm all about justice.
There is no such thing in America.
That's what I'm saying, is you just keep hoping.
That would be very sad.
This is why I get involved in some of these shows, especially even the OJ thing. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. we all know what the situation is. As a matter of fact, I was on Kim Goldman's podcast yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So this is such a surreal weekend I'm having.
You're having a podcast weekend, and now it's Father's Day.
Mm-hmm. How about that? Yes, tomorrow's Father's Day, and I brought my children with me. We just bought a horse.
That is
really?
Crazy.
What kind of horse?
A racehorse over at San Diego.
In 101 degree heat, how is the horse doing?
Well,
better than us.
He was in the shade, doing much better than we are.
Yeah.
Exactly. But we just stopped over here.
So how did you get interested in justice? How did that happen?
What's that?
How did you get interested in justice? How did that happen?
I think sobriety has something to do with believing in justice.
But Craig's been sober a long time.
Yeah, 28 years, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a lot of injustice that happened to me. I never liked the word victim, but a lot of that had to do with, I think, I mean, I'm just saying this off the cuff, but I haven't really thought about it, but I'm really passionate about justice. And I find myself in situations where there seems to be injustice.
Well, now, can you talk about the book?
Sure.
Okay. What's the title again? I forget.
It's called Love Mastered. It's a digital journey to love and happiness. It's a woman. Yes?
Craig has a character called the Love Master.
Yeah, yeah. There's
comedy.
A movie.
Oh, yeah, baby.
There he is. That's the Love Master.
See the look that I just got from Shelley.
Give me another taste. Oh, Shelly gets interested in weird things.
Baby, I love you so good. Your neighbor will have a smoke, baby. I'm the Love Master. One night with me, you'll be sweating like Donald Trump at a Mexican hat dance.
Shelly, I'll bring you Rudy. I'll bring you Rudy next time. Next time you come.
I'm so big.
No,
this is a nice switch.
Flesh-eating
bacteria gag, baby.
Oh, Jesus.
That was awful. Okay. And we're sitting next to each other.
But you can see she's responding, Craig. Keep going.
What Love Master is I was a geek growing up, and I was a 5'1", 92 pounds in high school. And so all the girls would use
injustice.
Unjust. It started with that. I was actually talking about that the other day it really was difficult in Philadelphia growing up to be puny. And we used to get, we're very poor, we used to get evicted. I thought the word evict meant move. Like they were the same word. Like, look, mommy, here's the eviction truck. I thought it was the same thing. I still keep a box packed to this day. Oof. I always think that someone's coming to get me.
Mm.
And we got evicted and we went to this other school and it was horrible. I was trying to tell my kids a story the other day. I tell my kids stories instead of reading books. I tell them stories about life. And I ended up, immersed myself in this story about eighth grade. I went to another school and I wanted to blend in. And I joined the football team, and I was 70 pounds.
Oh, boy.
And it was the 115-pound football team. That was your maximum. But still, I was just so puny.
Yeah.
And they would literally beat me up in the huddle.
Yeah.
Like, I was the center, just because that was the only position that was left.
Yeah. They started punching you.
And I wanted to, he'd say, good snap, and he would punch me in the face to release me from the huddle. And then they would give me wedgies in the locker room, and it was like a coyote wilding. They would just pull my underwear up, and I was so ashamed. I'd just go home with two straps left of my underwear, and they hang me by a locker and say, look, it's my art project, wind chimes. Bang your legs together. So it was just this constant, I just didn't feel a part of. And then what I found in telling the story is it still goes on today. Where I don't fit into groups. I don't, to this day.
So it's all traumatic reenactments.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in a writer's room now.
Oh, is that what's wrong?
I write for Fuller House. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I've never done anything but that. And now I've been writing for Fuller House in a writer's room.
It's awesome.
And it's the same thing, though. You know what I mean?
They hang you up by your locker and by your underwear?
Yeah. Because I'm the new guy.
They make wind chimes out of you?
Yeah. Bang your legs together. It's the same.
Or it just feels like they do that.
It's exactly right.
It feels like.
And that's what it feels like. Yeah. It's same with stand-up comics, hanging out with stand-ups.
Do you tell them you feel that way?
I did, and that was a mistake.
Because then they double down.
Exactly.
Comics are notoriously empathic group.
Yeah.
Comic writers are awesome.
Oh, my God.
Don't you think comics are the most traumatized people that they would go into that. Like, you got, I always think, I was a musician, at least you got three other guys.
Right.
Comedians got to go to, you know, Philadelphia or bum fuck wherever and by themselves. Thursday night, two shows, right? Friday night, two shows. Saturday
sometimes
night.
Three or four.
Right?
You could, and yeah. As
a, and you're by yourself.
By yourself. And like, as, if you're
no
bombing as
you
a band.
Drink and take drugs.
if you're bombing as a band, you could just play to yourselves.
No, right. You just play one night. You bomb. You just try to get the hell out of that.
Right. You can't
you
do that as a stand-up.
Six more shows.
Yeah.
You go. Did you see the last season? I guess of Louis C.K. where he was on the road. Didn't see it.
No.
Did you watch the Louis show?
I've never seen that show.
Oh my God, you love it. I think.
I stay maybe away from stand-ups, period.
I say maybe it's because the way, like the way I can't watch medical shows. I can't watch them. It's too.
Yeah. Too. There you go. I just sold a show, by the way, a medical show.
Good for
Isn't
you.
Funny? Yeah.
Tell me
I
about
can't
it.
Talk about it, but I will. But it's funny you should say
I'll
that.
I'll do a cameo on it.
Now, that I love is a medical show.
And three of us can do an appearance on it.
There you go.
That'd be great.
But yeah, it's just
but
it's
I,
something
that's...
I see
that's, all I, comedians, if you look at all the great comedians, they're all trauma, drug addict, Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor.
We talked
it's
about the
crazy.
Other day. I was talking to my
it's
kids
crazy,
about that the other day
the
also.
Trauma that... And that for some reason, the coping mechanism is make people laugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it becomes a career. And it's so tragic and
sad.
You
literally.
On a certain level.
That is the exact coping mechanism that happened. And it started for me right away. You know, my dad left when I was born. Something I said, wah, he's gone. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make my mom happy. She was so unhappy without this husband that she blamed for everything in life. Everything was bad was because of him. So I said, I'm going to fix her up with someone. So I used to collect baseball cards, and I found this one card, you know, Tim McCarver played for the Phillies. Yeah, I go, look, yeah, Mom, yeah. He could be my stepdad. He's a catcher, and I'm a pitcher. He can marry you, and he's really good looking. She goes, he doesn't want me. I go, yes, he does. And I wrote him a letter. Dear Tim McCarver, here's my mother in her belly dancing outfit. You know, that was a true story.
You said
her
another
name
too.
Was Scheherazade.
There was somebody else, too.
Yeah, I'll tell you about that one. Yeah. But anyway, can I curse on here?
Yeah.
So he never wrote me back. But listen, the best things in life take time. I told Joe Buck the story. It's his old friend and broadcast partner.
Yeah.
Next time I saw Joe Buck, he hands me a ball signed by Tim McCarver, and it says, "Dear son, time to grow up."
Oh my God.
Love, Dad. Oh, that's awesome. So I want to write my next book called God's a Slow Motherfucker.
Oh my God. But that is fantastic.
The other letter.
The other letter I wrote was to Paul Lynde. He was the center square.
I love him.
And, the center square.
He looked like he'd be a good dad, too. Yeah.
Well, my dream in life was to be the first father and son team on the Hollywood Squares. That was my literal dream. I could picture them going, I like Craig and Paul Lynde for the win, please. Take it, son. It's a sports question. I know nothing about the Phillies.
So, with his ascot around
and
his
ascot.
Neck.
That might have been a giveaway. He wasn't going to write me back.
Probably not.
He wasn't interested in Scheherazade's picture.
I would expect Paul Lynde to want to be a dad. I don't know.
I don't think so. One time on the show, they said, Paul, how many balls on a billiard table? He goes, I don't know how many guys are playing. I mean, that might have been a giveaway that he wasn't going to write me back. He didn't write back either, but I did get to
be. It was a different era. Nowadays, he would.
But a dream came true again. I told you, it takes time. I was on Hollywood Square, 75 episodes. I think you were on once with me.
I was.
And, yes.
I gotta look this up.
So, but the only problem is I'm not a big celebrity, so I was always Craig Shoemaker to block. Never on my own. One time I'm looking at a monitor, I'm the only way they go. She's like, I'll take Antonio Banderas to lose.
I'll take Bruce Phalanx to win. And Bruce was the on there with you?
Well, he was the go-to guy, yes, for the jokes. But
who was?
Bruce Phalanx, yeah.
Oh, I ran into him the other night. He is the nicest guy.
Nicest, smartest, and funniest. Oh. And smartest, yeah. He's incredible.
So, but you don't watch comedy because comedians are competitive, but yet you
That's
all
not why.
Sit together.
That's not why. And so I don't sit with
we
them.
Went to the, what was the Comedy Cellar a couple months ago in
the
New
Village.
York.
You know, you've been, I'm sure you performed there, right? Comedy Cellar in the Village?
Hold on for a second.
What's she doing?
Messing with my headphones. You can turn them up again. That sounds good. Yeah, okay.
We were all good before you started messing with them.
Yeah, what are you doing over here?
I'm getting glasses.
You need
you
help.
Need them.
You need help from the love master, baby. Oh,
so
yeah.
So listen. What's
it like if I do it to your wife?
They all go. All the comedians.
See what happens.
I set her up. You knock her down, baby. Oh, yeah.
So
all
what's
the
that?
Comedians who are kind of they're friendly, but not. They're all in competition for the same slot.
So we went to the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah,
and
we went there.
We went to see
Artie.
But
then they go upstairs and sit at the same table with that lady that owns the place.
And pass the money around and start dividing up the take.
Oh, okay.
That's also, they're there to divide the money up. That's mostly
what
they... Oh, that's what they're... But then they sit and have a drink or something. They hang out.
I find myself...
Aziz, Ansar...
Right.
Aziz and Artie and... Got that guy that was from Mad Men. He's
David Tell. Was he there?
No, the older guy from Mad Men. He was good.
He was very good.
Well, there's a, you know, it's, that's what they do. I don't do,
do you
that,
have comedian
though.
Friends?
I move
do you
to
have
the suburbs
friends?
And I just do, no, I don't have any. I mean, I'm friends with tons of them.
Well,
but as a matter of fact, my son, by total coincidence, became friends. His best friend is a comedian's son, and neither one of them knew that the other one was the father who was a comedian. Mm-hmm. His best friend is Brad Garrett's kid.
Oh,
that's
my God.
Crazy.
Isn't that crazy? They've been friends for a year before they realized, and one day he pulls up and he goes, my dad's a comedian. I go, who is it, Brad Garrett? I mean, Brad and I are friends, but we don't, nobody hangs out. Plus, when you get to be a certain age, you're doing your own thing, and I cannot wait to get home.
I don't want
to
talk
to my family.
I don't want to talk in front of your sons, but musicians bond over using drugs together. That's why we're in competition with each other, but we lived with each other. We shot drugs together.
You're
we
also
stand-ups together.
Do that too.
There's a camaraderie in music that I don't think there is in comedy.
You're like an
there is. Yeah,
there
that
is?
You're incorrect. Yeah. Oh, sure. I lived with comics before back in the old days. Todd Glass was my roommate.
Rock bands are sort of antisocial gangs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Each one is a little antisocial. What's the matter, Shelley? You like that? Don't like that.
Comics are antisocial individuals.
That's right. That's absolutely true.
At least
I was
there's only
say that.
One of them.
Yeah, isn't there a loneliness to being antisocial individual?
Of course there is. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I'm still a lone wolf. But I have my family. So I've been trying to create. I keep having kids. I have four kids now. I have two kids in diapers. I'm about 3 months from being on my own.
but Craig, let's keep going with the caretaking of the mom.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Imagine where that went in his young adulthood.
Yeah.
You don't think that he got his clock cleaned by a few borderlines?
That's exactly right. And then
right?
still is happening.
But they were drinking. You were drinking that.
The craziest thing is...
Well, 28 years.
Wait, I'll hear the craziest thing.
What?
Every day, no matter where I am, someone brings up borderlines. What does that say about me?
No, it's become a popular sort of a topic of culture.
But
I
they
mean,
find
I've heard
you.
It three
Is
times
that why you're
today.
Saying this?
No, but listen, on that unreal
no,
show
I said
that
it because
watched,
your boss was a form. Was,
I'm just saying, I sat down the other night, yeah. last night, and the girl's talking to me about her job and how somebody's a borderline.
Yeah, but listen, like, it's in the vapors.
What the hell?
Listen, in this unreal
it's
show.
Running for president.
No, I think so.
Whoa.
I don't think she's that. It's a lot of things, but
oh,
not that.
Oh, that's really scary.
Really?
That's scary.
I think Hillary's a borderline?
No, I didn't say Hillary.
Oh, you said she's running for president.
Trump.
I said it's
no.
running for president.
Oh, him. Oh, that's not borderline. That's they're all narcissists up there.
I know they are, but what is the difference between a narcissistic personality disorder and borderline personality disorder? There's not that big of a difference, is there?
They are narcissistic disorders. They are trauma disorders. But narcissists, the big thing is empathic failure. They just feelings don't matter in themselves or others. That's the fundamental.
That's the
thing.
Same with borderlines.
Borderlines are deep into feelings. They just don't know where the fuck they're coming from.
Oh.
They don't know if they're yours or mine or what. They're all over the place.
They
can't regulate them.
They put their own feelings in someone else and
right.
then make them react.
Do you get this?
It's called. And I'm a reactor.
Yeah. It's called projective identification.
And so then, so then you actually gravitate because they want to put them in you and then make you the puppet.
Yeah, that's right. Much of my book is about that.
So that's what I want to get into. So you get involved with borderlines.
Yeah. Well, what happened in the book, though, was a woman reached out to me, a fan of mine on Facebook, and she just wrote like two lines. I thought you wanted to know Matt and I are getting divorced after 30 years of marriage. And something inside of me, a higher source, literally spoke to me and said, share your pain with her. That's all it said. That's all this voice said was share your pain with her. Almost like, you know, Field of Dreams, you know, this voice from the cornfield.
That was a bad, bad higher self.
Is that a
bad...
to say that?
No, what happened after he shared his pain.
No. He was coming out of the borderline fog and in recovery.
Yes.
So I said,
I'm going to share my story, basically,
with
this person
woman.
Who is brand somebody, new, about to get divorced, of which I wanted to stop her from taking paths that I took.
Somebody out there. He never met her.
I hardly knew her. I met her a few times.
Why would you do that with a stranger?
Because something told me to. But here's what happened.
It's sort of like, why would you yeah. to have a confessional or, you know what I mean? It's a
little, I'm just much more cautious.
Yeah, I know. We've all been you're not. Why would you sponsor a stranger? Why would you help help people in recovery as a stranger?
Well, but I mean, just soliciting you because you're a comedian or because you're a book.
No, she wasn't soliciting anything.
It worked out fine.
I'm the one that said, help her because I had read.
How did you get the information? How did you get the email?
She wrote. On Facebook. Private message Facebook, she writes, thought you want to know Matt and I are getting divorced after 30 years of marriage. I saw through her post that she was just this really cool person. Something compelled me. And believe me, I'm far from regretting it, because what happened was we unfolded this beautiful love relationship.
Like a multiple hundred-page dialogue.
Over a year. I couldn't wait to go back to my hotel to see what she wrote, because I became like a muse to her. And so now she ended up sharing things that she never shared with anyone.
Trauma.
About mm-hmm. her husband was an alcoholic, he beat mm-hmm. her, all these things. All these things were revealed, and she was never going to say this to anyone because she had so much shame. She wanted to stay together for the children, all those traditional things.
They're really talking to themselves in this, is what happens. There's a person there, and the book
is our exchange over a year. And what happened is midway through, I went, wow, people should hear this, because there's a lot of discovery that's going on in here for myself as well, because I have a horrible situation with my ex, and that's what I share with her, which it's almost like giving her that, she was able to go, whoa, I've never had it that bad. You know, my ex has accused me of everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. It's cost me a fortune. Jeez, emotionally, financially.
And borderlines experience this stuff. They're not lying.
It's real.
They believe
for them.
That's
one of her quotes is, I'm not a liar. She says that all the time. I'm not a liar.
She's not. She's just sick.
And what happened is, you know, the children have been basically used as pawns because she gets to say, I am the protective mother cub. Mm-hmm. So to the public, which is, they're all about image. Well, borderlines are all about image.
This is going on all over America.
We talked about this last week with the sister in the TV show.
I was talking about that Unreal. They actually have one of the characters goes, I have BPD. She doesn't even say borderline personality. She goes, I have BPD.
Wow.
I wish there was more admitting of it, because that's the worst thing that they have, is they will never seek recovery for it.
Do you know the story?
They're unaware. That's the worst part about it.
There is no recovery for it. It's considered a chronic disorder.
I hate that. My problem is I have hope.
You want to correct them.
I want to fix them. Yeah.
But there's something called dialectical behavioral therapy that allows them. As I was talking to a DBT therapist at a university, I was sort of giving a little lecture. And it was one of the residents. She goes, yeah, I'm doing a lot of DBT with borderlines. And I go, how's that working out? And she goes, well, the borderline thing is still there, but the DBT helps them manage it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, imagine like if you had a broken leg or something.
Yeah, sure.
It doesn't go away.
No.
All the borderline process.
Neither does alcoholism.
So the splitting, right? the splitting, the good and bad, the black and white, the projective identification, all that stuff goes on. But they learn how to identify it and kind of work with it.
Yeah. Well, I just always look for some modicum of hope.
It says lots of hope.
Well, doesn't really happen more often.
Well, I feel like the true blue borderline can't see it.
Oh, no.
Like, truly can't see it.
And that's the biggest issue, is they'll never see it. And no matter how many things can be displayed to them or reflected back to them, it doesn't matter. They're not going to suddenly go, can't tell you how many letters I've written, emails. As if the next one's going to be a press enter, go, this will be the one where she goes, thank you so much for sharing. I had never thought of my life that way before.
Never thought of it that way. I see what you're saying all these years.
That's my insanity, is actually thinking that. So now, to top that off, my mom is like that.
It's shocking.
Surprise.
So now they are a team, and my mother doesn't speak to two of her grandchildren or her daughter-in-law, who I love and I've had the most amazing relationship with, or me, but has secret rendezvous, including last week, with my ex-wife. She comes down. She comes out from Philadelphia, and they have these secret meetings and hang out. And, you know, talk about me and everything else. So then I become the villain, and these two are. And I always say to my mom, I try to say to her, this, I would be in prison. Your son would be in prison if she had her own way. And you don't say a word about that, and that's who you hit your wagon to. It makes no sense.
What does she say?
Doesn't say anything, because what they do is they're cowardly. They do everything behind your back. And they do everything, you know, you'll hear from a lawyer. Mm-hmm. You will never see something direct coming from them. And that's the unfortunate.
You know, it's so funny. I've never really gotten the borderline feeling from talking to somebody before, but hearing your description, I get the feeling.
You didn't get it from that woman talking about her sister?
No, I don't get it when I'm in the room with them. But just hearing you talk about it,
my energy that I'm describing
it.
This
she's, well, that's the
is affecting
thing.
Your energy.
What it is,
wow.
is
so
they,
that's
they, they,
interesting
hang
thing.
On, Bob. They've so chronically put their shit in you.
Yes.
It's sort of coming off a little bit, and it's even going to a third person.
Wow, I can crazy? Make it go everywhere.
I've
got skills
America.
In this department,
but I come from this from. Very
just
interesting background
just
of a lot
it.
Of borderline women in my family, my mother, my grandmother. So through enlightenment comes like, I just don't listen to it. I just don't engage in it. It doesn't even exist. I delete their voicemails without even listening to them.
Oh, good for you.
Well, you got to get there.
Well,
because you got to focus.
I get there, but there's certain situations which are literal. You've got a literal sharing of children.
Oh, I know
of
that.
Children.
So
there
that.
Is that actual thing that takes place. I would run so far from this. I would move to another country.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to deal with this on. Mm-hmm. And then there's, of course,
it's
my mother
placating.
Is still alive.
It's guys, the natural thing to do. It's placate.
I have to take a little break.
Well, a break on a podcast?
Yes, yeah, we do breaks. And reminder, this podcast.
Are we live, by the way?
No.
It's a weird. Well, yes, we are live, but we're live to tape.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah, it'll go
so
up.
So this isn't going. No one can hear us and make a
not
phone
as,
call.
Not no. Because, well, she's lined up some calls.
Because by the way, that borderline. I don't know if you received the letter, but it was written in court that she wrote you a letter. Her best friend. She heard us talking on the radio, and the best friend, who's completely
now Drew it really is drug into it.
Thing. I don't remember.
Oh, you're so drug into this. It says, "Dr. Drew, I normally love your show." Until you had Craig Shoemaker on, who lied about my friend. She's not borderline. Oh. He's the one who's sick and all this kind of stuff. Oh, I haven't seen her in 10 years, but she knows everything about me. Mm. Oh, yeah, you got the. Oh, I can't believe it. It's in court documents. Oh.
Corey, you almost had a subpoena.
Oh, I love
oh,
that.
No, we love
she was not happy with your diagnosis
about borderline.
Yes. Oh,
they never are.
She. Oh, they, oh
right, well,
absolutely.
I don't know this woman. We're only based on what Craig is saying
right now.
Only based on what Craig is saying.
He's so full of it. He's so full of it. He's basing it on an energy. He's even picking up my energy, and he's never met her. But go ahead.
Well, maybe Craig's the borderline. He's actually
maybe that's the truth. I'm the stand-up comic. Maybe I am. I'm the sick one.
All right.
I'm projecting this onto other
I gotta,
people.
Got to take a break.
Okay.
All right. This particular podcast brought to you by our friends at Heal. Go to getheal.com. I am so excited about this particular product. I got on their advisory committee, and it is going to help solve some of our healthcare problems. It is an app. So get the Heal app, H-E-A-L. And for $99, your insurance will cover most of it. Most insurances are accepted. For $99, you have a board certified, sometimes double boarded. We've hand selected every physician. They're all high quality. We'll be at your house within 2 hours. They'll spend whatever time is necessary, $99 all in.
What?
And do it. Yes. Yep. It's so great. It's so great.
How many, you know, I was trying to think about it. How many visits can a doctor do to make that make sense? Can they do 10 in a day?
Yeah, they can do 12 or 14, sure. It makes good sense.
So they make $1,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
In a hospital,
way better. And so people don't understand, you know, sort of how badly physicians are paid out in the world. And so this for them, they can be their own person, they can be and set their own hours, and the physicians are happy, and the patients are very happy. Every time I mention on the radio, people come running and like, oh my god, I just called me the day. It was fantastic. It was so great. The physician he was doing. People don't understand really why they see the doctor. They think they want all that infrastructure and testing. No, what you really want is somebody highly skilled. Look at you, examine you, listen to you, make a judgment, and give you either a treatment or not. And if there's further to be done, he'll send you. Here she'll send you. Taking a break. Be right back.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest podcast or interaction with drdrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction per se. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the sites or podcasts.
Okay, hey, we're back.
We're back. We are indeed. So, Craig, I'm sorry. So we were interrupting you there in the middle of your saga. Man.
Me being the borderline now.
No, I come on.
Are we clear on that?
No, no, yes. No. We're not clear on that yet. But
she had a qualifier. I know you. She doesn't.
But you got to be able to. You got to be able to. Here's how you can tell. Because I went to therapy for
how
years
can tell
about
I
this. No, where when you're getting better.
You're not
there's
like
a really
Craig,
great
shut
book
up.
Called Getting Better,
stop
actually.
It.
But, huh?
I've got to get him to stop this. He's spinning
no,
like a dog.
You just, just when you see a voicemail, just delete it. Because here's what I've learned over the years.
But there's specifics on there.
No, then you call them and say, hey, you know.
No, that doesn't happen. Hang up.
What?
That's what she does. She hangs the phone up. If you say one thing that is against what she wants, she hangs up. So now
up.
That I'm in, now I'm engaged because I need an answer.
Hanging
so then I call back. And guess what happens then? He's harassing me. So now it turns into he's harassing me because I'm just trying to get an answer and say, please don't hang the phone up. It gets worse. It escalates. And then now you're off. And then the police are involved.
Really?
Yeah.
That fast.
Back in November.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. The one boy that was, he's in the other room right now. Yeah.
Delete.
Kept,
delete.
What am I supposed to
Drew,
delete
do you
that?
Understand what I'm saying?
He's at yes. the house. He's supposed to be with me. What am I supposed to do?
Oh,
just
text.
You were talking about Heather's sister. You were talking about the borderline thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I did. But Heather didn't. I didn't get the feeling. Of, you know the way
yeah,
I just
yeah.
got it, the way Craig was able to. I just and the feeling is essentially for me. It feels dangerous. I was just thinking, examining how I felt. I felt like uncomfortable and dangerous. It feels like oh, I can't like it can't be regulated. It's,
right.
It's dangerous.
Now, here's the good news, is. The stuff that you're saying, and then some, is what I shared with this person in the book
okay.
Love Mastered. Because there are times that I can literally sit next to my ex-wife at a function, at you know, watching our kids graduate or
and
whatever
okay.
it is. I can do it.
And you're good?
There are times, oh, I'm really great. And but I get sucked into the illusion. It happens with my mom, too. Because
mm-hmm.
they're so charming. I get mm-hmm. sucked in the illusion. Like, so then I'll say something. I'll say something at the dinner, Thanksgiving dinner, you have Christmas, and I'll say something, and then it comes back in a court document.
Yep.
He's abusive. He said that he does this to the, and I'm going, whoa, it was a joke. I was having fun because I thought we were having
fun. Oh,
there's
no joking.
So I've learned that lesson. But the book, I should have book two now coming out, but the book is about this recovery from this and sharing it. So guess what happens to her? She's 3,000 miles away. I fixed her up with my old friend, and she
Tim
had
McCarver?
Never been in love.
Tim McCarver?
He was in a... Paul Landau. I'm getting married in the morning. So she said, I'll never have... And here's the thing about comics that you didn't mention, and I bet you know this.
Yeah,
we have
maybe.
A psychic ability.
Yeah.
Very much in tune.
Yeah.
High level. And I saw for her what she couldn't see for herself. And I said, I think it's going to happen for you. I know that it's going to happen to you. You'll have a relationship. She had never been in love. She admitted that. She was with the guy 30 years. And guess what? Fixed her up with a guy who was also in an abusive relationship that he just got out of for 30 years. They are madly in love and getting married in a month.
Nice.
Yeah. They've Holy been together God. 3 years. And every single day
you
that they're on
another,
the planet together.
You got another career now.
I have you nine marriages I fixed up.
Love maker.
Nine
love
marriages?
I am
love
the love master.
Love master.
I have nine that I fixed up. Yes.
Wow.
I'm very good at it because I have an intuitive sense.
How many divorces?
Four divorced.
Okay.
I can't keep them together, Bob. I've got some skills. I can't see that far into the future. I can't see that they're not good in bed together, whatever the hell the problem.
It's a long and winding road, and you can't
I can't
be
play Cyrano de Bergerac with nine people, okay?
Really.
I get them to the altar,
okay.
And it happens.
All right.
And those don't even include all my marriages.
And so you're
I am happily married today, though.
Your recovery started
Congratulations.
When and why?
Well, I was not... you want to hear this coincidence?
Yeah.
My ex-wife, the one we're talking about now...
And by the way, we're talking about borderlines very disparagingly. I have deep empathy for borderlines.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah, and I know you like to make them happy and stuff, too. And you were just mentioning how they're charming, you like them and stuff.
Much
yeah.
rather that be the case.
Yeah.
Making her laugh, making my mom laugh, this is the most pleasure I can have.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought. When you said that your dad left when you were born and that you needed to make your mom laugh, that's when I started with what's up with the mom.
Of course. Of course.
Oh yeah, yeah, and so
and
she's,
then I worry that there's a covert something there too.
Yeah, what? Always a what? Covert something.
The
I didn't like the way he went. There's a covert something. Like he's a ventriloquist. When he's a ventriloquist, it's not a good thing. It's a covert thing going on with Trevor.
Covert.
Listen,
is a whole...
Jeff Dunham. What were you trying to say?
Go ahead, Shelley. You tell him.
Covert is a whole issue that is not overtly abusive to the child, but because they are so sick internally the borderlines or the narcissists or mm-hmm. whomever your parents are, they are putting things into you underneath your consciousness.
And oh, I know that.
The classic thing is, you're my little man. You're the husband in the house, which is considered covert sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And that's the classic thing.
What I've always believed, and she will not go in a room of therapy. I said, go in any room. You choose the person. I do it with both of them. Will not do it. Because you know what? Does anybody know what the answer is why they won't? Because I know the truth.
Right.
That's my offense.
Everyone else is the problem.
Oh, I'm abusive and I'm all this. But no, I know the truth. And that is so offensive to them because image is their most important thing. It's like they have spin doctors. That's why I was saying the person running for president seems to be borderline.
Well, the spin.
It's all
thing,
about the spin.
The spin is that everyone else starts spinning around
them. And the accusations.
We would call it the spin cycle where we were.
The blind accusations that go on. Right. It's just that's how they.
That's how they get you. You're like, what? Right. What? What? What are you talking about? Right. And they're like, oh, yeah, now I got him.
Yeah. And then you have to defend.
Yeah.
But the book ends on a very wonderful note because she ends up in love. And I'm in love with my wife and have the best life that I could possibly imagine. It's unbelievable how wonderful it is. Four children and we connect. And, well, I have two of them here with me today.
Yeah,
and we have this connection that I could never have dreamed of. And all because of just taking this other route.
No.
Had to move 3,000 miles away to get out of that toxic
nature.
You also
had to get sober too, right?
And that's what happened when I moved 3,000 miles away. So anyway, she... My ex, we were in acting class together, and this is like 30 years ago, and I went to a party with, actually, you know the other woman that went with her. So the two of them, I said, yes, I'll tell you later. So anyway, I said, can I get you guys a beer at the keg? And they said, we don't drink. I'm like, what are you on, solids? What does that mean, you don't drink? Because I had never heard of that. I thought all alcoholics had like a bulbous red corpuscle nose, you know, like Mr. Plunkett from Our Neighbor. I thought that was an alcoholic or my Uncle Steve
brown
or whatever.
Brown paper bag.
But I did not imagine me or these two beautiful women, Hollywood actresses, to be alcoholics. And they said, and that's who, so she ironically took me to my first meeting.
Oh, wow.
How crazy is that? And then I think to thank her, I married her years later. But she dumped me at first because I was a newcomer.
Well,
and then we went out again, dumped me again because she read my diary that she bought me.
Oh, no.
She bought me, and it says in the diary, it says, this is the most personal thing you can own. This is a relationship between you and God, and it should be sacred.
And she reads it.
And then she read it?
She read it. She read it and broke up with me because of what she read.
And this is your the woman you're married to now?
No, that's your ex. Oh, no, that's my ex.
Okay.
See,
she's around. Like, that has got to be a borderline thing right there.
She's been a sequel, but the last sequel was like a Police Academy.
It did the
sequel. So, yes, we dated then, and then we finally ended up together in 97. We got together, but then we've been divorced 10 years. But I'm married 8 years this week. Yes.
You keep coming back.
My head just spun off.
I will, baby.
How many times?
Are you 78? How old are you? So Craig was on a before the days of podcasts, I had a website company, and we did a broadcast, a webcast television program.
About sobriety.
Out of Old Town Pasadena.
No, it wasn't.
It was just interviews with celebrities.
It was entertainment.
Yeah, it was sort of. Well, sort of, but like.
Well, I thought you had a thing on the internet in the mid-90s for recovery, too.
No, never did that. We had topics about that, and we dealt with that stuff. But it was 99, and Craig was one of the. We have an archive of that. Those
do
shows.
Not. Oh, I don't even want to see it. I want to know what it looked like.
Yeah, pulling it up right now.
It's going to cheer you up.
And the one thing that my mom gave me, she passed on to me, is my vanity.
And here we are doing podcasts 17 years later. But the reason it didn't work is nobody had, quote, broadband.
No.
So no one could watch it.
Gotcha.
Isn't that interesting? It was all dial up, and you'd be like, Right,
yeah, it's true. So we go way back, and then of course Loveline. I've been on there a number of times.
So, you have any questions for the treatment team? That's given that you like the show.
Do I have
what I'm interested in?
Well, he's a big celebrity rehab fan. I want a take on a true celebrity rehab fan. Do you think we killed those people?
No.
What did you think when we started getting blame, in particular Drew did, when people were dying?
Well,
years
first of all,
later?
I don't watch the news, so I wasn't aware of that. I literally do not watch the news. I turn away from it.
So
I remember one
died.
Time I reached out to you about something on a text, and you were so offended that I would text you during a tragedy. it was like one of the shootings
that just happened.
I was like, Craig, what are you kidding me? my phone is blowing up, and you're asking me if I want to go to a movie? It was like something like that. It's like, I'm the go-to man of tragedy. How dare you? Don't you check the news? This is a Dr. Drew special that just took place.
So you like many 12-steppers.
What's that?
Don't watch the news.
No, I do not.
I watch it incessantly.
Big movement in the 12-step world.
Well, I have a thing called Laughter Heals. It's an organization. It was founded because my best friend, we bonded through comedy. As a matter of fact, he directed the Love Master movie. He wrote Cool Runnings, Little Giants.
Cool Runnings.
Yeah, he's a big comedy guy. And as a matter of fact, Laughter Heals, one of the things that kept happening was all these people would tell me that they were conceiving babies after my show. There was one that was conceived in the parking lot of the Brea Improv.
Really?
Because things get wound up. Like, people are so tense trying to have kids.
Yeah.
So I guess every guy tries to be the love master, and the women laugh, and everything gets loosened up, and they have a baby.
Oh, my God.
So it happened with him while we were filming in Arizona. She was ovulating, and then baby Kayla was born 9 months later.
Great.
So then here's what happened with Laughter Heals. So, and all these people would tell me, oh, our daughter listened to your CD. She has leukemia, and now she's in remission. It's wonderful to hear these things. So then he got brain cancer.
Oof.
And they said, you have 3 months to live.
Cool,
and we really got behind him, and we kept him laughing and laughing. He had a will to live because we all want joy in our lives, allegedly. And that's what we did. He came to all the Laughter Heals programs. He lived 15 years.
Oh, my God. Prognosis. Crazy.
With brain cancer.
That's crazy.
Inoperable brain cancer. And we obviously he did other things.
Yeah.
Chemotherapy chip planted in there. But whatever it was, we kept them going.
Chemotherapy chip planted in there?
It was a new protocol out of Duke because Henry Friedman.
There's different things. Depends what kind of tumor it's done.
But anyway.
Probably a radium implant maybe.
He was, he lived.
Let's keep hope alive. You want to talk about hope.
You keep
if
hope.
If there's a thing that you can live 15 years with brain cancer, that makes me feel better when I get a headache and I think I got brain cancer.
Oh, wow, right. Do you know Corolla's guy, Bald Brian?
Yeah.
He presented with a pontine glioblastoma, and they told me, I was like, I can't even.
Have three people that just said pontine goldfish. What is that?
Brainstem, severe brain tumor. You know, back when he was diagnosed, the life expectancy was 3 to 6 months, period.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
But Avastin had just been invented, and they were like, this might work for this. We're years and years down the line.
Okay,
now.
So
why
can't the drug companies just be making miracle drugs like that instead of opioids after opioids after opioids?
Yeah, I know.
Why can't they just stick to the miracles? Is it not enough money in it?
I don't know how to answer.
Just like laughter, man. You know what laughter does to you? Oxygenates your body. Healing endorphins are released. Stress is relieved. It's unbelievable how much laughter does heal you, but it's free. And they're not interested in that. Just like I was telling my kids on the way here, we're talking about marijuana. You know, they demonize marijuana because of money. Alcohol is far worse than marijuana, right? But it was because the chemical companies and William Randolph Hearst, they were threatened, and that's what happens.
With cannabis? Oh, no, they're going to take that over. He's
talking about how it got prohibited.
It became a demon weed, and yet alcohol is far more deadly.
Listen, we've been bobbing about it a million times, but our laws on drugs are insane.
It's all
absolutely
racism.
Insane.
It's all racism.
It's racism. It's money.
Racism.
It's corporate greed. It's all of those things.
No, that's later. But the original laws, everybody forgets. Heroin was legal. You used to be able to buy it from the Sears Roebuck catalog.
Uh-huh.
Bear
aspirin.
Cough syrup.
Did you know that? Aspirin created heroin.
I wrote a movie. I wrote and produced a movie called Totally Baked, and we researched everything. Mm. And marijuana is the
and
least
then you know, But you know
issue.
Then how the laws got created and race relations for political reasons.
LaGuardia. There's a whole William Randolph Hearst. It's all part of what I've
Does
told
America
you before.
Does America care?
No. They care about pot.
We go numb to it.
No, but do they care that you know, I don't want to get into my opinions, but heroin, how many days does it take to get off of moderate to severe withdrawals, like you got the flu? 3 to 5 days.
Yeah.
How long do you get off Suboxone?
2 weeks minimum.
Okay. So, but Suboxone is a great drug. Heroin is the
devil
drug.
We're going to Suboxone Corner with Bob. There he goes.
We weren't supposed to go there
yet. We're not going there.
I'm not going to say anything.
Heroin, that's all I'm saying.
Somehow, he was looking for that in. He was looking for the in. We covered A to Z,
but now we're
at Z.
But I really want to know, as a celebrity rehab real fan,
big
when
time.
You started, you knew because you're a recovering person.
Yeah.
Some of these people are going to die in the next 3 to 5 years.
Of course.
So when they did, you weren't watching the news. The show got blamed. Dr. Drew got blamed.
I've heard things about that, of course. But that's how our society is. Look what happens every single time there's a tragedy. You then see an ensuing debate on who is to blame. That's how we work. That's how, and there are so many borderlines and narcissistic disorders and so on, because we are not programmed properly. Mm. And that is what I love about the program.
We're a trauma nation.
Is because we are taught to be accountable and responsible. And what I was saying about my kids, this is the most incredible thing that's come out of this whole journey of mine, is to get to humility and gratitude. And it's so important. So we do gratitude lists around our dinner table. And Justin, you know, recently, that's what he says, that we do what I love about you. He says, I love the way you apologize and the way you can look within for your answers. And I'm like, whoa. You know, you'd expect him to go, thanks for taking me to the football game. Right, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, something like that. But, I mean, this is what the kids appreciate, is teaching them that through my experience, not from telling them. Mm-hmm. And I think that I can't stand when Americans talk about, we're not apologists.
Ugh.
Why would you not be?
There we're you looking are.
At, no, that's Dave. I
know. Why would
Look
you not?
Look at Dr. Drew.
Dave Navarro. Yeah, 17 years ago.
We're looking at Dr. Drew 20 years ago interviewing Dave Navarro.
How about that?
20 years ago.
That's the room, right? That's where you were in?
Yeah, Dave looks the same.
Yeah,
Dave
he does.
Looks the same.
Yeah, that's did you see his documentary about his mom?
No, I've heard.
Oh,
I knew the whole thing. You see, did they have the footage of the guy who killed her out on the ledge at the courthouse?
I don't remember that.
He escaped kind of when he was on trial.
Yes, yeah.
But he was in the ledge of the courthouse threatening to jump.
Now that I'm getting to know you three, I think you all need ADD medicine.
Yeah, we're a little that way.
Yeah, we're all
but let me just say that
easy.
The thing that you were watching on TV, though, and this Unreal show has sort of taught me, is that you're watching a reality show. Yeah. We were busy doing treatment.
Right.
You know what I mean? And some people were creating storylines out of our treatment to give you a reality arc. You know what I mean?
By the way, which were all edited, and I was certainly aware of that, and several months afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
I have nothing like I was on the show.
I'm noticing that.
Nothing.
I'm noticing
they
that.
They painted me into a corner.
Did they paint you into playing the part of Nurse Ratched?
Yes, they painted me into
that. You were Nurse
Ratched.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what you had to play.
They purposely did that.
They brought that out
in
you.
And I'm so nice.
but Shelley's firm, and they didn't like that.
Well, you have to be firm with these children.
Yeah.
That's the other thing I told my kids.
Is that Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah, Kimmel. I can't find Craig.
It's so crazy, all the people I interviewed for this thing. Isn't that crazy?
And how many people watch it? Anybody that had broadband?
Nobody had broadband. So nobody watched it.
I knew
we were onto something with that. I just knew that was the thing we had done
as
right.
As a matter of fact, us three watching it right now are going to be the most viewers it's ever had.
Well, can people smash records. Can people go on the website and find these things?
No, I have them in my vault.
She has them in her vault.
No, your vault?
Let's start releasing them.
Who in the world has a vault?
Talking?
I don't know what it is.
On the phone.
All right, well, you get it to me another time.
I'm so fascinated by this.
So listen to, I wanted to tell you what happened. We have Father's Day coming.
Yes.
And it's a big day for me because my dad As I said, he left and he became a cult leader. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
You're kidding me.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Yes, he has his own...
Was he the leader of MOVE?
No, his is a MOVE. You remember MOVE?
That's well, Philly, baby.
That's Philly, boy. Good for you for knowing that one.
He's a perfect match for your borderline mom, though.
Yep, that's exactly what I was
major
thinking.
Major narcissist.
Like, whoa. And,
well,
I used to visit him every few years. Oh, one of the best was he was entrepreneurial, which is a... French word for schemer.
Yeah.
And one time he says to my mother, if you want your child support check, invite your big-breasted friends over. My new business, I'm selling bras. Oh. So he had a bra business meets
That's
Amway.
A Philly like a multi-level of marketing. Donald Trump right there.
Multi-level marketing bras. So I hadn't seen him in years. I'm 7 years old. I look in the living room, and there's my, in quotes, Aunt Barbara, Aunt Dottie, Aunt Fran, all in bras in the living room.
Aunt.
My father's sitting there smoking a pipe, going, come on, Dottie. Show how it lifts and separates.
What?
Don't be shy. It's just you women and me.
When was this?
This is like, I don't know. I was a little kid, like 73 or something. And like
so he formed a cult now?
So I'm looking
after
in there.
After the bra scheme.
Bra cult?
No, that was one of his. Oh, he's been in a lot of things. He converted, you know, those things, in those landing crafts in Normandy with Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah.
I caught a shark one year when I was visiting him. Next thing you know, he goes, hey, I get those things for $5. You patch up the bullet holes, we'll make shark boats. So those shells that the doors open on the beach, he bought six of them. I went down with him to Norfolk, Virginia, and we towed these things. He bought a beach. It looked like the invasion of Tarawa.
And
he was going to make shark boats, and here I am spackling the bullet holes from World War
II. Is he bipolar?
He got them for $5.
Is he bipolar?
He's a schemer.
Oh, but we have clinical
so the
terms
business,
for that.
The bra business went bust, no pun intended.
The shark thing?
Then he had me converting cesspools to sewers. He handed me a little mini
shovel. Wait, does he own rehab centers now?
No. I'm very familiar.
Matter of fact,
one of the people I fixed up that got married owns one of those rehabs.
Oh, I'll tell you later.
Perfect. Yeah, he is still married. But anyway, so my dad, all of a sudden,
my sister rode a
horse with him, and he bought 75 mules, and he runs in the Pocono Mountains. It's the blue-collar honeymoon capital of the Northeast.
Yeah.
Heart-shaped pools in the rooms, 10-foot-high champagne
Hot
glass
tubs.
Jacuzzis. Jacuzzis. So now listen to this. So I hadn't seen him in years, and I'm playing there at Caesars in the Poconos. So my name's in lights, and I'm getting a tour of the place, and the guy has no idea. This is how famous my father is there. And he goes, well, over here, Craig, you got your racquetball, and over here you got your quoits. You can play horseshoes or quoits. And he goes, oh, my gosh, there's H.A. Shoemaker in his harem. What's that nut doing here?
Uh-oh.
And I got to say, that's my dad.
Oh. You're kidding.
And I had seen him in years.
Harem?
He walks up and he steals my complimentary cheese tray. He goes, hey, the girls at the ranch will love this. Judy loves Gouda.
The girls at the ranch?
Wait, he has 12 women he calls his harem.
He
calls it his harem, and it's known that this guy even said, there's his harem.
Did he recognize you?
No, he came there because my name was in lights. He wanted to recruit my fans to ride a mule.
What?
There's no BS. Zero. There's no exaggeration here.
They breed them in Philly
This is in the Poconos. So we're in the mountains, and now I do my show at Caesars, this beautiful theater. He has a clipboard standing there as I'm signing autographs, waiting for the filter through me and go, tell him who the real love master is. I got 12 broads.
Oh my God.
12 broads. It's my harem. Tell him who taught you everything you know. And I'm
I love the dad.
So
I love this guy.
So he signs them up. So now it's 6 in the morning. I
haven't seen his son in 40 years, and this is how he deals with it?
The next day, I get a knock on my door. He sends two of the harem over to get me. They go, where are you? The fans are waiting for you to take a mule ride. So I went on 10 mule rides that day.
It's going to be a sponsored mule ride with him.
Right, exactly.
Awesome.
He billed it as Ride with the Love Master. So he's telling stories about my childhood. And each ride, he would tell the same stories about the crabs and everything else. And then we're on these mule rides and making fun of each other. And that was our relationship. So
do you still have a relationship now?
No. He's another one. He's now.
All kidding aside, don't you miss people like that? Our society used to be filled with characters like that.
Yeah, he's a
characters.
He's yeah, but a
character.
When you're here's the problem, Bob. Here's the problem. His name's Bob. I agree with characters. You. But when you are seriously, when you're
you
the child
their
of
son.
The character,
you don't want to be their son.
It's yeah, exactly. But they all have to have, you know. By the way, he has another child. Based
oh
on,
my God.
So listen to this.
With one, of
I
the
met
harem?
Her 2 weeks
with
ago.
One of the harem?
I met her for the first time 2 weeks ago. One of the harem, one of the you
had
know one of his mistresses.
Is
or
she
whatever.
Okay?
She's great. I had a great time. I met up with her. She found me on Facebook.
But we had all those characters. That's why we have all the narcissistic disorders we have now. Mm-hmm. You understand?
That's right.
You with me? Bob.
Yeah, I follow it.
And you know what else you have? That I was talking about this the other day. You have the people like me with their children trying to make up for them.
I know.
So we overcompensate
yes,
and overcoach.
Yes, we did.
And this is the problem why we have everybody's got...
Well, most of these podcasts, Bob and I are sitting here trying to figure out how to deal with that population. And we're going to do one with Shelly where we talk about that specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because Shelly's on
the front
line.
Called learned helplessness.
With all that now.
Really?
Yeah.
Learned helplessness. So I need to learn to be helpless?
No. These kids, become dependent on rehab because it makes their bed for them and it kind of tells them how to do things.
You know what I did yesterday with the 11-year-old? I begged him and his brother.
Does
to do
the 11-year-old
themselves.
Have a name?
Jared.
She's called the 11-year-old.
Well, because I'll get
a little bit of Philly.
Drew,
a little bit of Philly left in the Southern California man.
Drew has no idea what he just did. Do you realize when you name the names,
your wife?
That's when they come after you.
I see.
Thank you for the next subpoena. Okay, and this time I'm bringing you in with me, since her best friend already wrote you a letter, which apparently you ignored.
Where can I find it? Where is that letter? Where is it?
Justin, can you get her to send it to me?
No. I mean, where would she have sent it? Where would she, like, Susan?
It's not only in court, it's in the therapist's
office.
No,
but I'm wondering if it's on our website somewhere. I haven't seen it.
This would have been about a year ago.
Oh,
yeah, it would have been about a year. And it was used in court and everything. And the therapist has it now. So you've even been discussed in therapy. It's like, has Dr. Drew ever met her? No, that's not the point. I described it. Anyway. So
jeez.
That's Drew's biggest fear in life.
No, my fear is being accused of hurting somebody or having done something.
But that's what they do. They accuse.
They're always going to.
So what was I just saying? I was talking about the other one. When I said the other one, the other son. Yes.
Susan's got something.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
What's the next letter going to be after this podcast?
I don't know. I guess the next letter will be, hey, I listened to your show. I'll never listen again, so you're going to lose one fan.
She'll say, thank you for calling Craig the Borderline. Now you're beginning to get some insight into what's going
on. Finally. Someone sees
what's
it.
What's that?
It says,
that's what I was just doing. He didn't like it.
Oh, you missed it. You were texting. Of course. The detached generation. It was texting. You missed. He called me Borderline.
He doesn't know. Okay,
Wait, hold on. Whoa.
Hold on.
We're
getting the kid here. This one is Justin. What was I saying about Jared, though?
As we give the 11-year-old.
The 11-year-old. What was I saying about
Justin?
Go ahead.
Oh, he couldn't do it. Both of them couldn't do a bicycle chain.
I think he wants
to. So I said, try it yourself, guys. Just try it. Sure enough, old dad, there I was. Greasy hands, and I fixed the chain instantly. They're both going, oh, it's broken in half. So go ahead, Justin.
Can we assess your long letters?
He's right about this. He's right. I'm being accountable. I admit to this.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
This is where I have a problem with you calling some people in our family borderline.
Yes.
If you do that, why ignite it by sending 7-page emails? It's like you want to be heard so desperately.
Maybe Craig
and
is a little
you run
borderline.
Your mouth and you can't.
Is that borderline? No, that's them getting a response out of
me. No. But
that's called something else. Give it a diagnosis,
that's not
Shelly.
No,
you're not going to be heard. You're not going to be heard. You can't play into their.
That
takes a toll on you. And then after you send that send button, you're a different guy. I see
That's what Bob was saying.
I see it in you, Dad.
Delete.
Honestly,
Bob was saying.
Bob
was just saying. Just
so work on it.
I work on it all the time. That's
we
what
were
the
at Wrigley
about.
Field. A great day, a Sunday afternoon.
Wow, we are getting down right now.
Drew's going to do
like
the ventriloquist.
There's a personality change. They buy into it.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. It is
a trap.
It's good that you know that.
It's trap. And it's almost like when
I'm glad he knows it.
No, when I deal with it,
he's going to have to deal
and
with
so,
this
and so you deal with it. Well, how do you deal with it?
It's hard to. Really is, but I think it makes me stronger for any obstacle I have to overcome.
Could you advise him? Would you?
I wish
to him?
I could.
What? I'm well, listening. I'm
for
asking.
For me, it causes what I've seen. If my mom is in fact borderline.
Let's not even call it something. Let's just say that she's doing these things.
These are actions you can't debate.
She has definitely taken me to court, by the way. Said I molest the kids.
Look, by the way, I abuse them, wrap them up in duct tape, whatever it is. Let me be super clear about something.
Yeah.
When divorces happen, the depth of the pain and the misery that people feel and put one another through, that people can, personality traits can emerge. Yes. That aren't even really
out of that emptiness,
but aren't even there in a tonic state. You know, normally they wouldn't be there, but in the face of all these crazy
feelings,
I think they're there.
They're just there moderately, lightly.
That's right.
And then that emptiness and that thing. I felt it in me when I got a divorce. All the worst part of me was coming out. I recognized it. I just said,
right. So okay. let's say that people get wild in the time of divorce, and parts of their personality can emerge that can be really troublesome.
It's 10 years now, though.
I'm just saying. Okay. We're giving her the benefit of the doubt in this particular conversation because we do not know her. Right. And you've got great kids and everyone's awesome. Thriving, whatever. And she's great, by the way.
She's a good person.
But I think what you're missing is your dad got such a big dose of this from his mom.
Yeah.
That it's really.
He sees it.
But well, it's really hard not to engage.
It's hard to disengage. You want to be heard so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when you
can't, build up.
There's no, you can't. And well, like, here,
they're
not going
to
hear. They're
it's
not going to respond
that you have
well.
The son they're, who has been in the middle of this, in the middle of this conversation.
Because I go through the same thing.
So now here's
I
what everyone needs to know.
And,
I am completely aware of what he's saying and do take care of that. But the book is also about the times I rumble, stumble, crumble, and fumble. And we all do because no one's perfect in life. Yeah. I am no question. Not one bit of me is denying what you're saying, and not one bit of me doesn't apologize for when I do it.
Because
I detach and I go away and I write these emails.
You need to do three steps around writing letters to your ex. The first, you have to do a third step or a first step even around writing letters.
I do.
Okay.
No, I'm not only aware of it, I take care of it. Here's the thing. What happens for me is I never start anything, and that's the way it is in life. I don't ever start with anyone. I don't ever start something. I won't.
But
say,
you're waiting for something to start.
Well, that's different. Exactly. That's different.
Exactly.
Something is started, so then I'm going, instead of just letting it go, like let's say, for instance, she says, hey, you are holding them hostage. Okay, so I've heard that before recently, right? You're holding them hostage, and you're not letting them call me. When I'm going, here's the phone, kid. Call her right now. Yeah. Like, I know what the truth is, so now I'm into defense.
Yeah.
Okay?
Can I piggyback on what you're saying?
Yeah.
So
piggyback.
Let's say
okay, go.
She's running with that.
Now
this,
running with
this
it,
this
right.
big perception, and there's nothing going to – there's no email that can – there's no anyone who can persuade her otherwise.
It's just is.
And she's running. He's holding you – okay. So I'll give you an example. When I went with you to Chicago – okay. Oh, he's using you. And I'm like, no, he's not. No, he's not. Like, you can't get it across them. And it's impulse. And that's when I start cursing and disrespecting. And it's hard for me as a person to deal with that in my sense that it's my mom.
It's very.
There you go.
Because you don't want to show disrespect. But
well, oh, here's the here's the 11-year-old.
Gentlemen. say hello.
Hi.
This is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is.
When you think about this, that here are the people that have been so much involved.
And they can see it clearly, and they can see both sides of it. What he's describing is both sides.
Yeah, exactly.
What I zeroed in on with my mom, which is I just, in order to not write the 7-page email, I need to not listen to the nonsense. And you have that right to not listen to the nonsense. Now, you guys know, and I go through this at my house too, kids really aren't interested in talking to the other parent when they're at the parent's house.
No.
Because there's a whole world at the other parent's house, right? My son's got what he claims is a better room at my house. I was like, it's not a better room. Yeah. It's just I spoil you.
All right, you guys, we got to wrap this up.
But I have a fundamental question.
Stay. Well, I'm gonna you bring your fundamental question to Shelley's pod. We're gonna do a pod with Shelley up. The next podcast with Shelley.
I crashed yours. You crashed mine.
She's giving me the look like I don't want this guy.
We'll have you do your fundamental.
She thought we were gonna talk about Suboxone.
No. We'll have you do your fundamental question and then kick you out, and we'll finish with Shelley. How about that?
Beautiful.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time. Also, before we go. Reminded to support those that support the podcast. We do. We're very excited about some of the people that we've been involved with here. And go to drdrew.com. You can see stuff on the banners there. Also, click through on the Amazon banner. It doesn't cost you a thing, but it does keep wind in the sails of these podcasts. We can keep doing them. Craig, what's upcoming?
CraigShoemaker.com.
Spell your last name.
Shoemaker, like a maker of shoes. No mocker. There's no umlaut. I'm not off the boat from Bavaria. Just a little shoemaker, a little cobbler.
And the book?
CraigShoemaker.com. It's Love Mastered. Actually, get it there. Amazon's got enough money. I'll give it to you out of my garage and I'll sign it.
Get your website.
CraigShoemaker.com. And go there.
Dates are upcoming.
Yeah, we've got schedules, dates, everything. I've got so many stand-up things. I've got Fuller House comes out this year. Season 2. Been writing on that for months.
That must be fun.
It's been quite an adventure. And they actually had me do the table reads as the actors that aren't there.
Wow.
And that's been a blast because I'm an actor. I did a audience warm-up one day. I'm kind of like the pinch hitter.
Good for you.
It's been a lot of fun, but a real learning experience. Being in a room with people.
You mentioned it.
Yeah, exactly.
We were more about it.
But this has been even more of a learning experience today.
Shelley,
I want to thank you guys.
People want to find you, Shelley, anywhere?
Bel Air Recovery.
Yeah.
Bel Air Treatment, and we're opening Bel Air Valley Detox.
Seems like a good program. We'll talk about that when you come in for your solo.
Okay.
All right. See you next time.
Lately, I've been waiting for you to come around. I've been wishing, fishing for somebody, dishing what you're talking, friend. And it's 3 a.m. Despite the whiskey, I've always been risky. And babe, trust me, you'll see. I'm not the kind of guy to give life a half try. And if you went back in time with me, there's ghosts and there's secrets, but you don't need to hear this. So let's stick with the spirit for now. Waiting for you to come around. I've been wishing, fishing for somebody, dishing what you're talking, friend. And it's 3:30 a.m. And it wasn't her age, her eyes, hazel or sage, or the way she plays the games you think she plays. But it's not about her hair, blind, long, black as an early dawn, or what town she's from anymore. No, 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 and I'll take it as a sign that her sitting here tonight means the world fits right to the morn. Lately, I've been waiting for you to come around. I've been wishing, fishing for somebody, dishing what you're talking, friend. And I know it's 6 a.m. With all of this chatter, I don't care for matters of sadness. So let's let this be. And there's no need to force it, but I ain't bullshit, and you seem legit to me. So I'll take it as a sign that you smiling here tonight means that made for a while I won't be alone. Somebody dishing what you're talking.